Well, hello and welcome to the Reconstructionist Podcast, where we are helping you reconstruct while you deconstruct so you don't self-destruct. So this week I had an incredibly fun conversation for me with a guy named Jaron. Jaron is a youth pastor at Bridgetown Church in Portland, Oregon, the church where John Mark Comer, the church where he founded, and the church where Tyler Staton is now the lead pastor. And we really break down youth. One, because I'm a youth pastor currently, but two, just talking about Gen Z in general. We break down what their youth programming looks like, how it's ran, why it's a bit different than maybe your typical youth group and the intentions behind that, but also Generation Z, who they are, what their struggles are, what the hopes are for them, what good things they do have. And I just, to be honest, it was a conversation that for me was really weird, because usually when I do these interviews, I stick really close to the questions that I ask. But for this one, we went way off, probably because I just wanted to pick his brain a bit on the subject. But I think we have a really helpful conversation. So even if you're not in youth ministry and this isn't something you're interested, I highly encourage you listen to this, because this is the upcoming next generation of Christians. And if the average person who's not involved in youth ministry can't stop to think about what we're doing as churches and as Christians to help the next generation form faith, the church is going to fail at reaching the next generation. So even if this isn't something that typically piques your interest or is something you would listen to, I highly encourage you to, because if we can have more Christians and more churches behind reaching this next generation, the more of an impact we can actually make. And so without further ado, here is my conversation with Jaron. Well, hello, Jaron. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Aiden. Nice to finally meet you in person. Well, digitally, I guess.
Digitally. Yeah, no, it's great. I've heard a lot about you as of recently, because you spoke at a conference. I think the CCLN put it on, didn't they? A few months ago in Vancouver.
Yep, with YWC and CCLN.
Yeah, and so you were there, which was cool. And then recently too, just for some of my context, I'm at a church in Summerland, British Columbia, and I'm a youth pastor there. And so coming on board on staff at a church that I haven't worked at previously has been an interesting experience. And then as time has gone on there, being like, what are we doing as a youth ministry? What do we want to do? What actually is our goal? And so your name has come up a lot for me personally, looking at Bridgetown and kind of what you're doing there, and how you guys handle youth ministry. So I've been kind of watching you from a distance for a while. So I'm pumped to have this interview, not just to share with other people, but also just selfishly to pick your brain. And so I'm hoping it's going to be a good experience. Not for me. I know it'll be a good experience for me, but hopefully for you. But for those who don't know who you are, can you just give a little intro to yourself, like who you are, what you do, and what you've been up to lately?
Absolutely, Aiden. So my name is Jaron Oda. I am 28 years old. I am a youth pastor over middle and high school at a church called Bridgetown in Portland, Oregon. I've lived here in Portland for the past 10 years. And as of 7.5 months ago, I've been married. So I'm learning what it means and how to be a husband leading in ministry, which is great. And everything in between, man, I am got a long way to go in a good way. All that to say, I am originally from Honolulu, Hawaii. So I came up to Portland about 10 years ago and started attending Bridgetown on Sundays, kind of one of those college Sunday warriors, and felt called and led by the Spirit to stick around, and was literally some of the deepest, best moments of my life came through some of the most pivotal, I would call them series, but I really do think there were moments in the life of Bridgetown that really, really, really transformed my whole view of Jesus, my invitations to be transformed by Jesus were transformed. So I just had so many formative years here at the church. And so in 2015, I started, had the opportunity to be a janitor here at the church. And so that's where I just got firsthand experience of just being present to Bridgetown, being the last one, first one in, last one out type of thing. and worked as a janitor for 2 years, I think. I think mm-hmm. it was maybe a little bit less than that. And then had the opportunity to start leading Bridgetown Youth in the middle school space. And so I've been doing that now for six years and some change, and then high school now for 5.5 years. So that's wow. just a bit about me. Yeah, and I live close to the church, my wife and I, and we just have been trying to stay the course and remain faithful here.
Wow. Man, that's awesome. I haven't heard of many pastors who start out as the janitor and they are kind of like, I just want to be here. That's so cool. I was even able to just briefly meet some people from your church. So Tyler, who's currently your guys' lead pastor, and then John Mark, who obviously founded the church and is now running Practicing the Way. So he's not on staff per se anymore. But it was awesome because as someone who has had encounters with, like, I don't know, Christian leaders in quotation marks, whatever that means, it's always interesting to meet people in real life and be like, who are you? How are you actually in real life? And you obviously have more of a personal connection with these guys than I do. So I'd like a brief connection. So maybe you're like, this dude's got it wrong. But I don't think so. It was so cool to see them interact with people and be like, wow, like these guys actually are who you think they would be, which isn't always the case. So John Mark in particular spent so much time. And I don't know if this is just because now he has more of the emotional capacity, not doing full-time ministry in the sense of like being a pastor on staff, because full-time ministry is a silly term, because that's what everybody does. But being like a pastor on staff, maybe it's because he had more emotional capacity. But to see him at this conference that I was at, taking time, not just to talk to people, but to like genuinely pray with them and have a conversation with them was like, wow, that's not normal. And then to a Tyler, just the generosity and like, I don't know, they just seemed like genuinely great people that was like, oh, good. So because sometimes you meet people and you're like, oh, no, that's too bad.
That's too bad.
And so it was really cool to see, man. Like, man, who you think these people are. And obviously they're people, but are like genuinely, like they kind of walk the talk that they would say, which is really encouraging to see. And so. Yeah, super cool. I've been a big fan of what you guys have been doing down there for a while, just at Bridgetown, specifically around spiritual formation. And so I kind of want to start by just diving into that. So you're on staff, and even I was curious. So recently, rethinking what I'm doing as a youth pastor, and is the way we're doing youth ministry the best way to form disciples, or is there something else? So I've done some digging, looking at what you guys have done at Bridgetown, and I was really curious because oftentimes, like, the church's mission and vision that a church will have is very different than maybe how youth runs, and they aren't super connected. But it was interesting because for your church specifically, your guys's mission and vision and what you do as a church is very specific around spiritual formation and practices. I was curious of like, what does that look like in youth? Is it really similar? And then looking at on the surface level of just a website, I was like, oh, it is, which is interesting because I'm like, how do you get a bunch of teenagers to be pumped about spiritual formation? Or maybe your goal is that you don't, and then you build around like the four who are pumped about it. So I wanted to ask you, how do you guys do youth ministry, and how is it, and maybe it's not, but on the surface, it seems like it's probably different than what I would like picture a typical youth ministry, which is kind of like the 90s youth group, come hang out, play games, have fun, we'll sprinkle in some Jesus, and then hopefully by the time you hit grade 12, you still want to keep doing this thing, but often you just drop off the map and you don't. And so how do you guys run youth ministry? What does it look like there in Portland for you? And how is it maybe different than like the typical like 90s youth group kind of vibe?
Yeah. That you Great question. Oh man, I'm gonna have some book recommendations.
That's great.
Because that I'll whole night, I just have so many opinions about that 90s to now, and where I think, or at least where I hope we're headed. But I would just say for Bridgetown Youth, I'm gonna start with a metaphor and then work more practically from that metaphor, if that's okay, or illustration.
Yeah, totally.
So we were at Clova Coffees. John Mark and I, we were on a walk meeting, just getting to know him. He's just getting to know me. It's just right after I was hired. And what he gave me was a vision for, or an illustration of ministry that just made sense. It just clicked in my mind and heart. And he, I didn't, I actually came from a Foursquare mega church Sunday centric model. So I was familiar. Yeah. In fact, that's why I think I was so attracted to a lot of what John Mark and the teaching team were espousing, because they were talking about the good in it, like honoring the good in it, but also calling us to something deeper and different at the same time. So, you know, he came from a little bit from that background. He said one of the most common things in a ministry is silos. When a church grows to a certain size that takes on subvisions and literally subcultures, that's just the human condition. That's the human dynamic. If it isn't clarified, then it happens by what's the phrase he uses? It tends to solidify if you don't be clear about what's actually happening. So all that to say, he said he would call the church a family. And he said, in any family, there are healthy moments of convergence and divergence. For a family system to be cohesive, you need moments where no matter what generation, age, or stage, you are carrying the shared vision, shared memories, shared practices, shared loves, right? Think about it at a dinner table. It doesn't matter whether you're one or 59. You're at the dinner table together. That is family. And there are for every healthy family, there are moments of divergence where based on your age and stage, and based on the specifics of your life and what's being called out of you or what you enjoy, those are moments where you diverge from what the family's doing together. Mm-hmm. So to essentially take that metaphor, anything that Bridgetown Youth now does is converging with the rest of the church, practicing the way of Jesus together in Portland. Nothing changes there. Be with Jesus, become like him, do what he did. That's convergence no matter what. But how we diverge is based on the discernment of the highest levels of leadership at Bridgetown with me as the pastor of youth, and then with our youth team, and then finally with our youth students. What are the specific areas or aches or questions that this maybe the Spirit's bringing up, maybe a bunch of our students are bringing up, and usually that's kind of a both and, right? Yeah. And then we intentionally diverge from what the church is doing while being very clear that we are a convergent ministry, meaning we will always be back and always cultivate the rhythm of practicing the way of Jesus together in Portland. Now, that said, to give you an example, right now we are in a series at Bridgetown, or we're just coming out of one, on the 7 I Am Statements of Jesus. Wonderful series. Part of me wishes that we had just followed with and converged with the church, but we had the strong sense that we were growing in prayer as an entire church. But part of how you grow deeper in prayer and part of how you grow more comfortable in prayer is biblical literacy. There's no denying it. A more deeper understanding of the scriptures tends to carry like a more vibrant life of faith in the community. And we just realized that a lot of our students didn't even understand, and myself included, by the way, how the meta narrative and how the story of God comes into our ordinary lives and how that transforms us and how that basically forms us. So we diverged from our church for a season, and we're going currently through a series on biblical literacy. And then we will converge back again for what's currently been going on here called the whole spirituality, which is mind, body, soul, and spirit, getting to know God through a whole spirituality. So I hope that makes sense, but those are moments where we converge. And I mean, every year we diverge at some point with Bridgetown because we're talking about things around, you know, dating, romance, sex, et cetera. So those are always like, I think, really, really good topics to bring up annually, whether you're, you know, converging or diverging, et cetera. So those are other rhythms.
So for you guys, when I think about like a youth night or whatever, because I don't know what it looks like in your context, what does, like, do you guys have like main nights that are like main gatherings? I assume you do, but maybe you don't. Okay. What does that look like? So like what happens at a youth night for you guys?
Yeah. So this is okay. I'll start with another illustration and go practical as best I can. So illustration being, if a young person at 11 years old came to Bridgetown Youth and she ate everything that we served, metaphorically speaking, every rhythm, every conviction, every kind of thing that our curriculum would offer. And she would walk and practice the way of Jesus together in Bridgetown Youth. Our hope from 11 to 18 when she graduates would be for her to show up to Bridgetown Basics class, where you're now a young adult, and now you are being invited into life and community at Bridgetown. And say, perfect scenario that she stays to the church, that as she enters those doors and sits down and listens to the vision and DNA of a Bridgetown community and practicing the way of Jesus, she goes, I've lived this stuff. One, I've experienced the living God, and I continue to. Two, I not only do I know about this, but I've lived this in my bones. This has become a part of the way I live my life with Jesus. And three, not only that, but I could probably lead and maybe not be a leader of community, but at least be a mission coordinator, at least be this or that, and have exposure to what we do weekly around a table in community, because that's what they're going to be doing primarily as adults. So one of the reasons I think that 90s to 2000s thing that you were talking about is how much continuity do we have with the stages of discipleship that we're calling adults to? Where does the continuity begin? Where's the training beginning in youth ministry? You know, and that drop off, my hope is that that drop off is less and less. A practical example is one of our students who went through Bridgetown Youth. She had the chance to not only be in Bridgetown community, but she literally told me this. It's one of my favorite stories where she was like, I now see how our youth community was literally preparing me for life in community. And not only did she like make that statement, but she became the mission coordinator for her community and helped a bunch of adults in different ages and stages come down to the bridge, to under the bridge, and serve. Because part of what Bridgetown Youth does is we, you know, are allied with the ministry in the city and serve monthly. And so she got the chance to be a leader, not just someone who's in the community. So that's one story where we're just like, more of this Jesus, please. You know?
Yeah.
So that, all that to say, that's the kind of high end illustration. Practically speaking, we gather weekly, both in middle school and high school, and we serve monthly. Those are our two rhythms that we're primarily doing, that we're always inviting students into. And then we retreat annually. So those are the three things that you can expect at a Bridgetown Youth curriculum, or whatever you want to call it, a Bridgetown Youth rhythm of life, is to gather weekly, serve monthly, retreat annually. And we sprinkle a whole ton of other rhythms or initiatives in between that. But that's primarily what we do. And whenever we, another illustration that hopefully I can make practical is every rhythm, every decision we make, I do my best and our team, we do our best to try and filter through, is this growing us in disciple, mission, or family? And that is what you would also find at a Bridgetown community, is family, mission, disciple. Those three identities being expressed, being strengthened, being cultivated in community together. So gathering weekly is family. Gathering around the scriptures is disciple. And I'll go into spiritual formation for youth, but in a bit, if that's okay. But that's where we primarily do in-gathering stuff. And part of that is mission too, where we're inviting students to consider that their lives exist for far more than this little community here, but are called to be scattered throughout the city, schools, families, etc., and serve and evangelize. So all that's to say, that's kind of a I hope I'm doing it justice by explaining this, but that's kind of our vision there.
It's super interesting. So when you look at your youth group, because I'm having these conversations right now and these thoughts, who is it for? In the sense of, there's different people you can try to reach, and they all require a different approach. So you can try to do the both, where you're going to reach the kids who are like, who you would say are part of church families of people who are here. And then you can try to reach the like inner city kids who are not a part of our church family and they don't go here. And so you can have both, where you're trying to reach both, which usually means you'll probably lose both at the same time, but also gain some at the same time. Or you can have like a different approach, or maybe you try to reach more inner city kids, which looks really different than if you're just trying to reach like, let's pour into the kids who are here, who like are a part of our church family. Or maybe there's a whole different way that you think about it that's neither of those. When, if I were to ask you, like, what is Bridgetown Youth actually like aimed at, and who is it actually aimed at, what would you say to that? Like, what is your great question? Trying to reach?
Great question. So every ministry has an inward facing identity and an outward facing identity. Our inward facing identity, always, I mean, my primary responsibility And this is, you know, just what it means to be a pastor at a local church, in my opinion, is to be a shepherd and overseer of first those who are committed to the church. What that means is the families and the students who exist within those families that are following Jesus regularly in Bridgetown community. Those are the kids that I'm not out there evangelizing or you know, sending folks out to. Those are the ones that I start with as my primary responsibility. Those who are already coexisting in the ecosystem of our local church, if that makes sense. And that's not, I'm not trying to be an exclusive person when I say that. I just, I'm naming, that should be everybody's first responsibility. You can't invite folks into something that you yourself are not growing and cultivating regularly, you know? Mm-hmm. And that, as they say, the grass is greenest where you water it. And so whatever you have in front of you, or rather whoever, is of primary importance. So when I'd say, when you ask me who is Bridgetown's, you know, Bridgetown Youth's ministry exists for, it starts with the students that I'm entrusted and responsible to that coexist in the local church. Yeah. And then, so that's one thing. And then on the other end is the outward facing ministry. This is where I would say Bridgetown Youth is weakest. And part of that's just because, you know, whenever you get to lead a ministry, you always bring your shadow. You always bring your weaknesses with it too. And one of my weaknesses is personally, I'm not gifted in evangelism. I don't have that wiring. While I love having conversations and apologetics around culture and around secularism and around Christianity, I typically am not the type of person to do a lot of initiatives that just bring people in from outside, if that makes sense. So that's an area where we're growing. So I will just be honest with you and say, like, the past 5.5 years of my job has been trying to deepen what we have here as an inward facing space to go deep. And then the heart behind what we're hoping to do in the, even in the next 6 months, so I'm interesting, I'm talking to you about this, is to really focus in on how is our outward facing ministry being hospitable to the local community around us. Cause it really is, or else it can just turn into an exclusive holy club, which, you know, part of that is really necessary because you need to weigh Christians just as much as you need to count them. But counting Christians, meaning the whole idea of bringing people in and going out, this is what Young Life and all of those ministry, parachurch ministries do so well, is they show up to where kids already are. I would say that's the initiative that's coming next at Bridgetown Youth. But part of the reason why it didn't start that way, honestly, is because I think it's part of my own weakness, an area I need to grow in and our team needs to grow in as well, you know? So part of that means too, like, I have to intentionally, and I have a few of these leaders which are incredible, but intentionally empower a few of our leaders and students to start, who have more of an evangelistic wiring. We're all called to it, but some have a charism for it, you know? And those are the ones that you get a chance to empower too. So I would say outward facing ministry is to come, but we want to be hospitable to the city around us. And I think that's hopefully where we're headed.
No, that's great. And that's helpful. None of these questions so far have really been on what I told you. So sorry about that, but I'm still curious. So when you are then, like, let's say you're running like the middle school night or the high school night, what are you guys actually doing? And so if you are like, okay, let's build on this group of people, that's who I've been, like, one, hired to pastor, but then two, also, like, that's what a pastor does. So I've got this group of people in this church. How do I pour into them and help them become disciples of Jesus? What does that look like on a youth night? And how is it maybe different, or is it, or is it that different than what I would think of like a typical 90s youth group where you come and you play a ton of games, and then like half of you are there for the game and then half of you are there for the Jesus stuff. And hopefully by the end, we'll sprinkle in some Jesus stuff. And then hopefully at some point you start caring, but a lot of you won't. And then we'll just do that. And then we hope that it works out. So what is your youth like? Look like, and what is it different than what I would typically think of a generic kind of 90s youth group kind of vibe? And if so, what is making that different, or what do you focus on that's maybe different?
Yeah. This answer will disappoint you, unfortunately. Part of our youth gatherings is modeled from a Sunday, and part of our youth gatherings is modeled specifically for what life in community will feel like, look like, taste like, be like. Yeah. That makes sense. So we have a blend of both. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to say for every youth pastor, if anyone listening, is to pay attention to where you are being led. And where you are currently being led, that means the rhythms in your life. That means the areas of your life that are being cultivated personally in community, and start to pay attention to how these things are shaping you. If you're doing life with others weekly in community, how are you giving the invitation for your students, or at least training them in small steps to start integrating what you yourself are being led by? You know, so that's why life in community is an expectation or a core value for any of my youth leaders. Because again, I know this is an old adage, but it has so much truth to it that you cannot lead people where you have not gone yourself. So one of the expectations to be a Bridgetown youth leader is that you're in or seeking regular community under the authority and love and care of the elders of our church. Because that's what life in community is like when you're a young adult or when all the way to when you're a senior, right? So all that to say, part of, to get practical now, we gather regularly, so you can expect coming in through the doors, being welcomed by our team. And I'll start with high school. Middle school and high school is different because we have stages to what we're introducing students to or what we're integrating students to. So I'll start with high school. And essentially what we do is we gather and we start with a game to break the ice. So it's very similar to your 90s group. I'm not too much of a game person, but I have recognized that games are the best. Tell me if you find something better. One of the best ways to level the playing field of hospitality. Yeah. It's where no matter if you're the youth pastor of the night or if you're a brand new person, you're seeing everybody have to get their ice broken down a bit, if you will. So games are a huge part of hospitality, a huge part of the culture still at Bridgetown Youth. So we start with a game, the ice gets broken a little bit. And instead of just having food laid out for people to eat, from the game, we move into a time of communion. And so we do communion regularly. And part of the reason why we do that is because the Lord's Supper is taken regularly by Bridgetown communities on a weekly basis, where you gather around the table and you go through the liturgy or whatever you want to do as it relates to communion. So we have a chance every Wednesday night, whether a student, it's their first time or they've been here a bunch, they get to hear by one of our leaders the chance to be contemplative and reflective in communion, but also to be celebratory. And then from that space, because if you look back on how the early church did communion, it was a love feast. It wasn't just a contemplative, like sorrowful, oh, he died for my sins. It was also a space to say death is not the end.
Yeah.
And we eat in the name of Jesus. We eat in the new life of Jesus just as much as we recognize that we are forgiven. You know, so we have an opportunity after communion to break out. And that's where the food and snacks come in and we eat together. Because maybe they don't know this as clearly as I'd like to express it, but they get to taste what it's like to be in community, literally.
Yeah.
By eating in the name of Jesus, by talking to someone they haven't regularly talked to, et cetera, by learning how to become a hospitable people. You know, that's one of the beauties of having communion regularly. And they get to just always remember that we're a Jesus community through that. So after we do communion, then like any Bridgetown community, you're getting announcements. So we give students a chance to get updated with everything going on in the life of our community, any activity, any invitation, a few moments of testimony and prayer too for those that we serve regularly. And then like prior to any kind of teaching or movement, we have leaders pass out journals and Bibles. So we keep the students' journals at the youth room, primarily because they always lose it. And we found ourselves like constantly being like, bring your journal. And it just never works out, man. So we keep their journals here at our youth room space, and we leaders get the chance to pass them out, because it's really important that our kids know that we have the utmost level of integrity with handling whatever they're writing down, right? Yeah. We just pass out journals and Bibles, pens, etc. And then after we do a space like that, we usually transition either to small groups or some kind of group reflection. Any healthy culture of spiritual formation has regular reflection and testimony. That's one of the best things that I've come across in the life of our community. And what I've seen to be most beneficial to people, if we're inviting people into practice, we're also indirectly inviting them to reflect on how they're being changed and then to share on the highs and the lows of formation. Because remember, spiritual formation takes place in the place where you are least like Christ, oftentimes, as Dr. Mahalan would say that. So spiritual formation is wonderful and it's also painful. It's also very, very real. And you're also getting to the grit of your weakness, et cetera. So we usually do either small groups or we have a time of gathering reflection where students are sharing what worked, what didn't work, any stories that are good, any unfinished things, things that you're still processing or working through. And we have students and leaders share so that the room can feel, you know, leveled out a bit. And then usually after that, we gather around the scriptures and that's when our series comes in, teaching, et cetera. And then after teaching in a time of, sometimes time of response, we haven't been perfect about that, but ministry response, then we usually do, or we always do this like end of the gathering, Jesus blessing. It's a long thing I could give you, but essentially we just read this short liturgy over our students and we invite everyone in the room, no matter what they've been through throughout the week, to say to the person next to them by name, you are the one who Jesus loves, and bless. Mm-hmm. So regular blessing at the end of every gathering. And then an invitation to see you next week. Just the idea of a consistent presence and a consistent gathering and a consistent community being something that can always be welcome to return to. So practically, I ran through a lot there, but that's kind of what we do. And that's honestly a lot of what I've currently still experience being in the Bridgetown community. Yeah. The only difference is, you know, we are usually reflecting on the teaching as it leads to practice, but we're doing teaching and we're doing reflection on the practice in the same evening at a youth gathering.
And how long are those? Are they usually like 2 hours or like 3 hours?
Yeah, sometimes we go a little longer, but yeah, usually two and a half.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And so for your serve, I don't know much about that. What is like your monthly youth serve? And is it like both middle school and high school together, or are they still separate and they do two different things? And what are some of the things you guys do in that? What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I would just encourage any community. Someone said something to me that was so fascinating recently. They said the best thing about being proximate to need is it breaks off the natural narcissism of young people. Mm-hmm. When it comes to serving, part of that happened organically because I was serving regularly on a monthly basis. And I had the chance, I just realized, like, again, being paying attention to where you're being led is so, it gives you space to actually invite others into it. So part of it was just my own relationships that I already had. And for any youth community, I always tell this to youth pastors, don't recreate the wheel when it comes to doing something. Just pay attention to the need of your city or community. And this is what I think I was saying before. What's really important for young people is to be proximate to need, because that has the tendency to break the natural narcissism, honestly, or self-centeredness. Yeah. That we all usually have. It's fine. I mean, I'm not trying to shame anything. I think that's part of the human condition, right? And especially as you're a teenager, you tend to have yourself as the center of the world. And there's almost nothing like need and different perspective and a space for you to contribute to something larger than yourself with your hands and feet, not just in your mind, not just hearing stories. Yeah. So I could give you so many reasons for reaching out, but ultimately the primary reason is because Jesus did. And so all that to say, we serve regularly with a nonprofit organization in the city of Portland. They've been a part, they've been doing work in our city for almost 20 years, primarily with the houseless folk community, and then in what's called low asset communities in the urban core of Portland. They have done incredible work, and it started with a coffee. I just had coffee with one of their leaders, and they invited me and our youth community to join them at an initiative they do every Thursday night under the Burnside Bridge in Portland, where they set up spaces and different different tents, stations where you get the chance to serve folks in the like inner city area of Portland who are houseless and everywhere in between that who just need help and need. So we show up there every one Thursday a month, and it's both middle and high schools invited. Parents are also invited, youth leaders. So we have our whole youth community at some point kind of go through that with us. And then we have some structure of spiritual formation and discipleship and reflection when it comes to mission. That is critically important, by the way, Aiden. If any pastor's considering serving in a context of need, nothing will do it better to break open some good questions and conversations and prayers. But you need to have some kind of model or working structure to help disciple those spaces well.
So for you guys, by the sounds of it, those are the three things you do. You have your weekly youth gatherings for middle school and high school. You have your monthly serve, and then you have an annual retreat. And so my guess is you don't have any additional like Bible studies, or on Sundays, for example, you don't do something extra for you. So I didn't experience this when I was growing up, but at both churches I've worked at, this is a thing that exists. Where for Sundays, especially in middle school, they'll send the middle schoolers away during church to essentially go and do something else. And so I'm guessing you guys don't do any of that stuff. Or if you do, you haven't mentioned it yet.
Yeah. So for middle school, they worship with their parents and they come down to the youth room on Sunday. So we still have that kind of separation. But in the youth group, we tend to, much of middle school's rhythms are, again, almost, if not the same, just a bit tailored, very, very similar to what we would do in a high school community, which is all of those same and shared similar rhythms. And we have, again, like I could give you more insight into our small group culture too, because our small group curriculum is where we're seeing a lot of like really deep, honest, and spirit-led things happening, which is wonderful. But overall, for middle school, we still have our own separate things. And then when it comes to prayer, we have rhythms around prayer where every second Sunday of the month, starting with our middle schoolers, we have a space where we have some free food. They get the chance after the gathering to hang out. And then we've invited, we have a prayer team here at Bridgetown that is representative of different generations, different ages and stages. And we get the chance just to invite that prayer, some of our folks from the prayer team in, to be able to pray, prophesy, do some teaching and training around how to hear God's voice. So that is another area that we do regularly, at least in middle school.
That's super interesting. Okay. Now that I picked your brain on ministry, for those who aren't into the like super deep details on being a youth pastor and running youth ministry and leading that kind of thing. So with Gen Z, I'm right at the edge of like, right where millennial ends and Gen Z begins. So I'm in this weird in between space of a generation. But when you're looking at, because how old are you?
I'm 28.
28?
Okay, so I'm in the millennial category.
Yeah, you got bumped. When you're looking at Gen Z and this upcoming generation, what are some of the awesome things you're seeing, but also what are some of the like unique aspects and concerns that you're seeing as a youth pastor interacting with this generation on the regular?
Man, you know, I will say this. Generalizations tend to be helpful and they're almost always wrong. So I need to be careful about how I do a general. But I will say that on just a level of my personal experience with the kids, and then also just through reading and research and all the other things, I would say some of the things that I'm really hopeful in is, and I'll start with a Gabe Lyons quote because I think he said it best. He said, "If you don't understand social renewal, you will not understand this emerging generation of Christians. They have an ache, a passion, to a degree, almost like an overzealous intensity to see reformation, to see things changing, to see institutions called." I mean, there's like, when I say they, I mean, on average, they just care more. They have a greater concern for the future. And I think that's awesome. I really do. I personally, I was telling one of our students this, that I think my hope is that the future of how we do at Bridgetown Youth, at least evangelism, will start with, don't just come and gather with us, come and serve with us first, literally. Yeah. And we've seen that be the case where one of our students is telling, he said it's so much easier to invite his friends to come serve with us than it is to come and gather with us. And I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense. Yeah. You know? So what an opportunity for us as a youth community to be, try on the lifestyle of Jesus with our hands and feet as we do that together, like inviting people who are, you know, who haven't been to church or know no background of it, giving them the chance to try on the lifestyle of Jesus, even before they hear the gospel declaration in front of them, you know? Hmm. So that's one of my hopes. And we've seen that to where like we've had a bunch of kids that aren't regularly committed to our youth gatherings whose parents don't even come to our church. And they show up under the bridge with us and get a chance to, you know, serve and get a window into why we're doing what we're doing, you know? So that's actually been really cool for me. So I would say this generation on average, or at least in my experience, has a greater concern for the world around them and to be people of compassion. They're also a lot more aware of how the past affects your present. Hmm. And what I mean by that is some of the therapeutic things around how trauma and wounds and, you know, you are not what's called a porous person. You are you're not a buffered person. You're a porous person. Yeah. And I think that's really cool. A really great opportunity to see that. Yeah. You aren't I know a lot of people talk about our generation or the Gen Z folks being so obsessed with self-identification. But on the other side, I'm also seeing a lot of kids who are recognizing that their identities have been influenced and shaped by forces outside of them. And I think that's a really good opportunity for us as Christians, because the gospel starts with an external announcement. The good news, you know what I mean? It's the image of God, but it's also, you need to hear the truth, and the truth often comes from the outside of the living word of God. So that's another thing that I think is really exciting, is they look at the world, at least in my experience, with a more porous sense, to use Charles Taylor's language, around forces outside and influence things within, vice versa. So that's another thing that I think I am, at least in my wheelhouse, seeing that I'm really stoked about. And then last thing is, since they have a high value for mental health and the therapeutic language, there is an ache for transparency and vulnerability. And that's a great opportunity for us as pastors and leaders to be honest about our own journeys, you know, and our own wrestling with Jesus. And that's why I think spiritual formation is an incredible conversation and culture to carry in youth ministry, because the pastor always needs to say, I am also being led where I'd rather not go. I mean, that to me is a very important testimony to our students. You know, follow me as I follow Jesus. And as I follow him, I'm sometimes being led to great weakness, great struggle, great wrestles. You know, so that's another area I think Gen Z, I'm like, wow, what a cool thing that they care about that and value that.
No, those are great. I see a lot of those myself and can like affirm, like, those things are definitely things that are like, this is cool. And then for some of the struggles, especially even I noticed that post COVID, and I don't know if this is the same for you, but for me, it was like, wow, it's like we've got different struggles now than before this even. So what are some of the things that you've seen that are some of the things that can maybe get in the way of discipleship, or maybe some of the hurdles that are like, huh, this is a hard thing for us to have to like overcome or to figure out, how do we help you guys with this, or some of the unique, because in a sense too, like as someone who, like, I don't know, my high school years are getting farther and farther from me, but when I was in high school and stuff, I was always kind of baffled why people thought generations were so different, because part of me was like, guys, we literally struggled with the exact same things. So when parents are like, oh, I struggled with partying, and you're like, that hasn't really changed, like that's still a thing. But there is some uniqueness to, like, for example, a smartphone is not something that existed for generations before me when they were in high school and stuff. And so what are some of the unique struggles or challenges that you're seeing are like, huh, this is interesting and unique to maybe just outside the norms of what maybe we've seen before, or maybe they are things we've seen before, they're just manifesting in a different sense.
Yeah, that's a really good question, man. And I don't know enough about how to relate the two together. Besides, Jean Twenge's work on iGen was very, very eye-opening for me, though. Mm. She helped to give me statistics and language around things that I was noticing but unable to articulate. So that book was really helpful for me, and I think still carries a lot of relevance, even if it was written pre-COVID. And another one's Tim Elmore, who wrote The Pandemic Population. Dr. Tim Elmore, he has some really good stuff to say about a complicated versus complex world. And he would, to just tangent a bit, a complicated world is like solving a math problem. You can solve it, half of it in a day, go to sleep, go back to the next day and finish it because it's the same thing. Whereas a complex world is one is a problem that you try and solve today and tomorrow it's completely different. And so you constantly are being misdirected. And I would just say that I think, at least on a felt level, I really resonate with that language. Like, we have gone from a complicated world to a more complex world where problems are being thrown at us, different problems from different angles are being thrown at us every day. So an inability to focus is a big thing. And I would also say that I think personally busyness, I don't know how else to tell you, Aiden, like the youth students that I'm around are busier than I ever was when I was in high school. And I don't know, you know, I wish I had more information to tell you, but other than the fact that my kids on average feel a lot of pressure about where they're going to be as far as academics, as far as income security, as far as where they'll be in 5 years. So the good news is they are thinking ahead, but that's also the hard news is they're thinking ahead. It makes sense to me. I wish I could give you like a whole sociological explanation of it. Obviously, most of the images of COVID were death, sickness, crowded hospitals, and closed businesses. And then you're hearing all these things. You're seeing your parents struggle and fear financial. You know what I mean? So that's got to shape your imagination at least a little bit. Yeah. So I would say busyness is a big factor that I've come across often in our youth setting. I hope some of these things are at least making sense, but those are some of the difficulties that I'm seeing.
They totally make sense, especially busyness. It's been interesting, not even just kids, but even just families in general. Like, the busyness is sometimes shocking as a pastor. And even the priorities, this isn't to harp on people, but it is like, sometimes I'm sitting there and I just have to shake my head where people are like, man, my kid is like not following God and they don't like care. And I'm like, okay. And it's interesting sometimes to look at life, and it's sometimes I'm like, I can see why, because one, for you as a parent, it's like, it's clearly not the priority. Like, you might feel like it's a priority, but as far as like time and what comes first, where does, like, honestly, in the sense of just gathering as the church community, does that take priority? Or if something else comes up, does that get removed? And then in a similar sense, too, when it comes to like sports or drama or whatever for students, are you like
resume
sport we've signed you in or the musical you're a part of or your grades are more important than you gathering at the youth night this week? It's just like really interesting to see, because a lot of times I'm like, well, it makes sense to me. Because their priorities have been told that that's not the most important thing, and they're not being put in it. Not like it's like, come fill my program, but it is interesting. But then even as far, and I've been thinking about this more and more lately, about just how busy our culture is in general, and how, because John Mark talks about this a ton. It's like his whole like biggest book, Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. But it's true. But I often find that people agree, they just don't do anything about it, myself included, where it's like, the rhythms of our lives can't keep up this pace. There's no space for boredom anymore because of social media and YouTube and like the endless media stuff, that even the space you have, you'll fill it. And so you'll feel like you literally feel like there's no time in the week. And in the same sense too, we then take all the other space we have as far as like adults working your job, doing whatever, students, school, and then all the space after that gets filled with other things. And so you don't really have time to be formed as a disciple. And it's just really interesting. And I don't know what the answer is, because sometimes I'm like, just stop. doing the things. And even recently with a student, I had a conversation because we started doing some practicing the way stuff at our Bible study. And for them to be able to come to, so we do it, we were doing it monthly. And for order for them to come to the next month, if they were at the previous one, they had to have not succeeded, but at least tried the spiritual practice. And one student specifically told me, like, I don't have time to have a Sabbath in this entire month. And I told him, and it was a little bit like, I don't know if this was the right answer, but I told him, I was like, man, if you're too busy, one, I know you're not too busy to not have a Sabbath, but two, if you're too busy to have a Sabbath, like in just reality, like, dude, you're too busy. Like, that's what I need to tell you. Because I was like, all you have to do in this whole month is you just have to take one day to be like, I'm just going to try to rest. And you have to read just one chapter of the Bible. You just have to read James chapter 2. And that to him was like, he had no idea where he was going to put that in. And part of it was being sometimes a teenager not being able to like fully grasp. Like, it's like this outside thing you've never done. It feels so big and scary, but actually you can do it. But then also the reality is like, yeah, this kid's super busy. And so for me, it's interesting to be like, this is such a unique problem that isn't just in one. Yeah, it's just interesting because it's not, it doesn't matter where you go. It feels like everybody's booked constantly and is like super exhausted and doesn't have time for the things that they would like to genuinely. If you're to ask them, do you want God to be a priority in your life? They say yes, but we find a hard time actually doing that. Absolutely. So fascinating. And I don't know what the answer is to that. I don't know how to fix it. I just know, yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. And then for a lot of their peers that aren't necessarily believers, it's really interesting. I had the opportunity to show up weekly to, it's a private Christian school even. And at a private Christian school, while I was showing up there weekly, I noticed that they come off like nothing seems to be missing from their lives. You know?
Yeah.
And one of the most important reasons that brought me to church when I was in high school, something was missing. And what's fascinating about busyness is it can really kind of, you know, stave off those existential questions that the scriptures, that Jesus, that the church longs to speak gently to, you know?
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why I think you can't just preach. There's a God-shaped hole in your heart. A lot of them are too busy to even notice that hole. You know what I mean?
That's an interesting observation because I've been wondering the same thing because in my life, there was like a point where I was like, I have gotten all the things I thought would bring me joy and they haven't. And I realized that I'm not going to be able to find what I'm looking for in whatever, like whether it's popularity, success, whatever, sex, you name it, that's actually only going to be fulfilled in Jesus. But there was a period where there had to be space, which is why I think Bible camps are still, I don't know if Bible camp is a huge thing in America, because I know I talked to someone from the UK. And he's like, none of us do that. But in Canada, it's like this huge thing. So correct me if I'm wrong, but every summer, for some reason, all these non-Christian parents send their kids to Bible camps to like get rid of them. I don't know if that happens in America. Is that something you experienced too?
At least not here. I don't know about the rest of our country, but not
so
here.
It's super weird because as a Canadian, you're like, camp is one of the most important ministries like in all of church because it's where a lot of people actually. It's so interesting though, because I talked to someone from the UK who was like, had no clue what I was talking about. I was like, this isn't a thing. So it's like a weird Canadian thing.
Different countries have different religious memories.
Yeah.
For sure.
And so it's been interesting for me to realize that's not normal. But so the interesting thing about Bible camp was you would go to this camp for a week that your parents would send you to because they just want essentially for you to be gone for a week. And so they're like, I don't like it's a Christian camp or whatever. And so you'll get sent there. And in that week, you'll have the space to actually have those existential life questions because you're forced to have them.
Yes.
And so for a lot of people, that space is where they actually make a decision to be like, you know what, I'm going to follow Jesus. So for me, it was like that for almost everyone I know. Camp played a massive role in their faith. So it's super interesting. But you're right. There's not, outside of stuff like that, if that happens in your life, there's no space to stop to even recognize how you're feeling as a person, to be like, wait a second, I feel empty and like void. And I don't know if the way I'm living my life is actually working, that you don't actually have the space anymore to stop to even feel that. You're too full of content or stuff to even be able to ask those questions. That's super interesting.
Mm-hmm. And they would say, you know, I remember reading this quote where they said, curiosity is a natural human experience. Indifference is a learned behavior. So indifference is what I see a lot of students outside of the church appearing as, which I think is a learned behavior. And our assumption, a healthy assumption for every pastor, is that deep within them, there's a curiosity about the things that God speaks to, you know, existence, if you will.
Yeah. So I'm trying to be kind to your time because we've already gone over. So we're going to find a way to land the plane. Great. So I'll probably ask one or two questions more. So when we're talking about all this, where we are as a church, what you guys are doing, what we're seeing in this upcoming generation, what do you think the church needs to shift to better, or even just to reach this upcoming generation? What are some of the things you think need to be shifting in the way maybe we do church and the way we do youth to better make disciples of Jesus and give kids today that opportunity to actually have an encounter with God and have it be something that's like life-changing for them?
Man, I wish I had the answer to that, but my opinion, or else it'd be like one universal church, we'd all be doing it. My opinion would be that a church, specifically a church, a youth community that can have as much continuity as possible with what you're going to be doing as an adult. So thinking of yourself as how many rhythms are going to end with this youth when this person leaves youth ministry, that's something to consider. Continuity is really important, because at the very least, they should be, if they're like out of your youth community, but they've eaten a lot of it, I would love for my students to be haunted by personal encounters with Jesus, but also haunted by life in community, also haunted by regular confession, also haunted by, like gathering around a table together and in the name of Jesus. You know what I mean? So at the very least, haunt our students with the experiences of living the lifestyle of Jesus, you know? So that's one thing that I would hope for, is as much continuity as possible from youth students through the track of adulthood. And I would also say this, it is really easy to be heavy and it's really hard to be light in a city like mine, and just naturally with a personality like mine. So for leaders, spending time with God's presence gives you, personally, I really do think this, it really changes your disposition and attitude towards the problems of the world. And when you can offer your transforming self to your students and they watch how you're a stable, godly person in the midst of whatever's going on, I think that's some of the best things you can offer, best kind of presence, personal presence you can offer your students, is becoming the kind of person that can say to them, do not fear, but with credibility, and say to them and live with them in such a way that they see the life of Jesus carrying the fruit of the Spirit. So I wish there was an easier answer, but like living alongside your students and having as much continuity as possible in youth rhythms, my hope is that that will be, you know, something that could have more stability for the future. And then inviting doubt and crisis. That is one of my favorite things to do. One of my favorite things to do in my youth community. And for the few that have graduated from our youth community, they said it was so, one of the most meaningful things for them was to have, was to basically have their questions validated without even a clear answer. Just to know that the church validate and a spiritual community validates questions and longings and hungers meant the world. So those are some things I would say to that. But ultimately, man, you know, people return to where they're most known. So you can never discount just time, quality time spent with the people you serve and lead. Something that I know I have to grow in.
I think those are great things.
Personally, and they're the slower, sometimes often the harder things, you know?
Jaron, thanks for this, man. I appreciate your willingness to come on here, because I don't know, we don't really know each other at all. So for you to just be like, sure, I'd love to talk about it, is super awesome, super helpful. Just as we close here, if people are wanting to kind of learn more about this, or maybe be like, yeah, okay, I want to either read some books or do whatever, have some resources. Are there things, because you kind of mentioned it at the beginning, are there some things that you would recommend to be like, you should read this or listen to this or do this if you want to dive deeper into these kinds of topics?
Yeah, great question. You Are What You Love by Jamie Smith is one of the best books I've ever read on why meaning matters in spiritual formation, why giving the vision matters. And one of the way that he teaches us how to long to become better people. That book is incredible. Live No Lies by John Mark.
Yeah.
Such a really good book for any kind of regular teaching that you're going to give to this generation. That book is such a stable anchor, a brilliant read. And then obviously everything by as much as you can get from Fuller Youth Institute. They've got a lot of good stuff coming out of the woodworks with them, because they're partnered with Barna as well, that has, you know, some of the great stats on the Western church. And I think they're growing in the global church statistics as well.
Yeah.
But those things are helpful reads for me. And then my personal favorite, who I think is one of the best spiritual voices for teenagers and for Gen Z teenagers, in my opinion, is Henry Nouwen. I think anything by Henry, getting as much as you can from the way he lived his vulnerable life with God before others. Oh man, I wish he was still around to be offering his insights to reach out to this generation. But I really
is there
do
a
think,
particular book that guy's by, writing by Henry that you would recommend is like, so if someone doesn't know him and his writings, is there one you'd be like, read this one first? Like, this is probably one of the most important ones that you would recommend.
Great question. Ah, God, that's so hard to choose for youth ministry. For youth ministry in our context, he wrote this book called Life of the Beloved. And he wrote it not for a Christian audience. He wrote it for a secular audience. But oddly enough, that book did wonders for Christians. A lot of folks in the secular, and he was a secular Jewish friend he was writing to. But that book is absolutely beautiful and will warm your heart to reaching out to your kids and to living authentically, the life of faith authentically. So I think that's, but honestly, I mean, while starting with that book is great, all of his reads will help hopefully shape your disposition as a pastor. Name of Jesus, Reflections on Future Christian Ministry, that book is signature.
Jaron, thank you. This interview has been awesome. Appreciate having you on. It's been a ton of fun to do. So thanks, man.
Absolutely, Aiden. It's great to meet you. Thanks so much for having me on.